buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me, whether you like it or not. But you have an off button on your radio, so you can do that as well. It's important to know that the rules here are really none, except it's not a good idea to mention that you got any information from YouTube. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and my guests today are Dan from S&S Tire, and I think you're a second generation of that, of the ownership of that.
Yes, sir.
And Dad and Mom started it.
Absolutely.
And your dad started?
In 1976.
Okay. And you guys started with tires, but your relationship was with a variety of companies?
Yeah, we are, I would say, tire-oriented, but we do full service and have three locations in the West Valley.
Okay. And I know that it's called S&S Tire, but I already know, I know too that you do pretty much all the maintenance, alignments and stuff that goes along with tires, but air conditioning services and all that other kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
But that's the name that got started with Mom and Dad.
Absolutely.
So you're a second generation.
Yes, sir.
Sitting to my right is Brad. We couldn't decide what we're going to call Brad, but some of the names we tried weren't very nice, and I would get in trouble on the radio. But, Brad, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark.
And we haven't really decided what you are, but for this time I'm going to call you Customer Service, HR, and Personnel, which is the same thing.
I'll take it, yeah.
All right. And you're the third generation of this family.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, your transition, you went to high school. Did you go to college?
I did some college.
Oh, so did I. So nobody has to know if it's 2 hours or if it's all 4 years. So you don't ask me, and I won't ask you. So the idea is you are on the job learning.
I am, yes. As I travel between the three locations, I'm helping and learning at the same time. And I've got a couple of great mentors to learn from, too. So.
Do they always agree?
Not always. So, most of the time, though. They get along. They do get along very well.
But don't you think you might be like the tiebreaker?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think they should come to me for the overall answer. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Somebody has to be at the steering wheel. But if you're the third vote, then, you know, you might do that. I know our kids, Andy and Alan, do the same thing. Sometimes it's we have a discussion. Actually, there's four of us, Renee and I and the kids. But one of us will draw the short straw and can't vote. And so everybody else will do it. And Dan, when Brad has a problem, does he call you? And this is how I form it. He calls you and puts all the problem on the desk and walks away?
No, he doesn't do that at all.
Has he done that when he started?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Because I say the same thing to the kids. Call me with the problem and give me the menu, and I'll pick which one of them I think we should do.
Absolutely.
Which forces them to do that. But there was a lot of time. It's calling. I said, you just walked in and left a mess on my desk. I mean, somebody else has caused the mess, and you didn't do anything about it. Now you want me to be the fireman.
Yeah, that's something in our company we try to emphasize throughout, actually, just salespeople and down the line. But don't just bring problems, bring solutions.
That's a better way to put it, and you're right. Brad, are you part of the team that hires and dismisses people?
Occasionally, yes.
Okay. Yep. Do you remember the first person you had to dismiss?
Oh, I do, yes.
Now, that's traumatic. I remember that. That's traumatic, right?
I would have to say it's probably one of the worst things that we've got to do on our plate, you know. So, but, you know, when it comes down to the overall picture, you got to have the right people in the right seats. And, you know, if they're not performing, it's bringing everybody else down. It's something that's got to be done, unfortunately.
Now, after being in business for 39 years, this is what I think about that. When you go to dismiss a guy, any kind of a guy, you might start off with is, Do you have any idea how long it'll take you to find another job? Kind of sets the tone. Now, I would say 90% of the guys I've opened with that have said, I'll have another job in 2 days. And then I say, okay, well, how can I help in the transition? Because it's not working. It's not working. And do you want to know your deficiencies? Do you want to know what the issues are? No, no. They'll either be no or they'll say yes. But, and then, you know, if you'll give me a resignation, then, I'll pay you for a week and you can go out and see if you can find another job. Well, today that's not a good idea because there is no jobs, or there's jobs, but no technicians. They're slim. They're far between. And it seems to me we're doing what we've done in the past. We just steal from one another. And that's something
that happens a lot. We're doing a lot of the, shows with the students and mm-hmm. Go and, you know, meet the high school students, meet the VOTEC students, trying to get a kind of a leg up when they haven't maybe made a decision as to what direction they want to go. So college isn't for everybody.
Well, and I agree. You've got some trade schools around you. Do you go there? Do you find the quality of the kids there, the quality of the men and the women there, a little higher than the other kids that you might hit in college, junior college environments or high school environments?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the kids that are going to one of the trade schools, you know, at least have chosen a path. You know, when you hire a kid out of high school or, you know, college, they really aren't sure what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally you get with the trade school, you know, the kids that are, parents wanted them to go to college or do something.
Yeah.
And trade school just happened to be it.
Yeah.
So you get some that are more involved, or better than others, but, yeah.
I think that my argument with the trade schools is that I'd like to see you be more general. A guy comes in, he's got a diesel background and he doesn't have anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably great from what it is, but the diesels don't make up 10% of what we do, maybe 15 or 20, but, and, or they're a BMW focus, or they're
yeah,
some kind of an import Ford or anything. So I wish it was more general. I wish, and they don't really start anymore at points in condenser, and obviously that's not important. But if they did, then that kid would be able to work on a car that's pre-74, pre-76 for Chevy, Ford, and Dodge all went to electronic ignition.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, these kids are spending a ton of money on these tech schools, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, I'm sure it's good quality training, but I personally think that us as shop owners need to maybe do a little better job of bringing them in and mentoring and
that's the word.
Having a program that suits some of these younger kids that they can kind of grow within our company and maybe they're not, you know, with our company forever, but you know, they've learned some valuable stuff while they're with us and then go on their way.
And the mentoring is the word that seems to be something that's being discussed within the car repair industry. We've looked at hiring a young person, a man or a woman, and putting them with a senior tech and giving the senior tech a very small piece of that worker's sales, so to speak, or of his labor effort. And having the senior guy watch the younger guy, and then together they diagnose the car, but the senior guy goes to the next car and the young kid goes to the repair. The two big problems with that is when the youngster makes a mistake, then the senior tech is not willing to take responsibility for it. And the senior tech really doesn't have time to do this, not recognizing that he's getting paid for him and he's getting paid for maybe 10 or 20% of the kid. So it's been hard to do that transition. The mentoring part is hard.
Very.
Those of us that have been in the business a long time just can't take enough time out of our day to walk them through.
I agree.
So, and it's tough because so many of them bury themselves because they're alignment guys or they're air conditioning guys. And it's just, I think you'll agree, we need more well-rounded guys.
Absolutely.
And we need guys that have been around the tool truck for 5 years, you know, which means they've been working somewhere. So are you doing lots of interviews, Brad?
Fair amount, yes. Okay. Yep, and you know, touch upon the schools that you're discussing. We've gotten a lot of great young men and some women as well out of the schools that are just eager to learn, and you know, to provide a mentorship is really a great way to keep them involved. You know, they have that desire to continue to learn, and if you don't provide, you know, some way for them to keep going up, then, you know, could lose their interest. But.
And you're both right. The other thing that we used to have auto mechanics classes in all the high schools, so we could go in there and talk to the students that were there with greasy fingernails. We had the opportunity to talk to them and hand out business cards and all that kind of stuff. All the auto repair shops are gone. So in the East Valley, they all go to Evett. And so what we've done is we called the other day to a couple of people that we know at different high schools, and we said, we need somebody to run parts, sweep up, we need a just general repair, but somebody who's really interested in cars. And these two people sent us three or four applicants, and we found them to be good. But the teachers, I think, know really the good kids that are on time, that have initiative, they're walking across the street or walking across the bays, and they see something on the floor, and they pick it up. Do you know what I do? I have left $20 bills in old styrofoam cups behind the fence, and they may sit there for days. I'll focus a security camera on it. It just sits there for days. So after a couple of them picked it up and found money in it, then they recognize that somebody's doing it. I'm admitting to you that it's me, but I just want them to have initiative. So now I'm down to $5 or something like that. I'm not doing 20 anymore. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you certainly can give us a call, 602-508-0960. I'm going to leave something out here, throw something out on the table. So if you want part of this discussion, is there any advantage to filling your tires with nitrogen as opposed to compressed air? So when we come back, we're going to talk about that, and you're welcome to join us at 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Dan and Brad are here from S&S Tire. Dan is like second generation because your father started it.
Yes, sir.
And then Brad is your son, and he's the third generation.
It's my nephew.
Nephew. Okay.
Yep.
Does he belong to Rob?
He does.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So does he get along with Rob pretty good, or are you the mediator between them?
it works always.
Okay. And it's the same way in our family. It's the same way in our family. So 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is we've got Dan from S&S Tire, and then we've got his nephew, and Rob's the other half of the people that are flying the plane.
Correct.
So you and Rob are in the pilot seat.
Certainly couldn't do it without him.
Yeah, and then we've got Brad here who has the broom. And he kind of goes around and cleans up the small messes?
Yes.
Okay. Are you willing for that?
Yeah, okay. I'll take that too.
You can be the janitor. We'll just rename you the janitor, and you clean up the messes. How about that?
I'm pretty good with windows.
Well, and you could use that on your business card. I'm the janitor for S&S Tire. They go, what does that mean? You say, I clean up messes. Okay. My daughter has on her business card, Andy Salem, CEO, full-time babysitter of the men at Salem Boys.
That's
and
good.
She didn't get permission before that, but it doesn't bother me a bit. I don't care. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete auto repair. Family-owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck Knighty, who opened that shop, since 1968. He's a good guy. They provide good quality service. They stand behind their work and all that other stuff. Their staff, mechanics, aren't paid a commission. Now, most of our industry is kind of looking at that, but it's important to understand that they don't pay their mechanics a commission or a percentage of your repair bill, so therefore they don't sell unnecessary parts and repairs. There's a lot of us that are keeping track of that to see how that might work. The issue is productivity. So nevertheless, if you're anywhere in Sun City and you need some car repair done, the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, is Auto Dynamics. So we were talking about, during the break, we're talking about the difficulties, Dan, of running the shops at times. I'm going to give you a few minutes to think about it, but the biggest issue you've got, and I'll tell you ours, it's the vendors. We get hustled a lot. And not unlike when your dad started and when I started, there's lots of guys out there. and there's auto parts stores galore that are willing to give you good service and all that other kind of stuff. But then there's the warehouses behind those stores, and then you even have another level after that. So the further up you go, then the further, the more money we make on the part. But at the same time, there's a volume associated with our sales. You run into
this thing. Yeah, I agree.
And when we talk about parts, I share with lots of people, and you and I had this conversation earlier, is that Wix and Champ make virtually every oil filter that's sold in the United States. So to pay extra $15 or $20 or $30 for a fancy filter that does better than everybody else is going to be kind of a tough sell for me. I'm not selling that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The hard part is, it's the same with batteries. I tell people, buy the cheapest oil filter you can find, because realistically, if I'm impatient and I need something, I'll go down to the auto parts store and I buy the same thing. I'm not going to drive to Phoenix to pick up an oil filter.
Correct.
And they don't FedEx oil filters, so my daughter already told me that. Nevertheless, those are the kinds of things that we have. There's lots of places that provide warranty for their parts, but it's not necessarily in any way, shape, or form put us back the way we were before we installed their defective part. And then you probably, Brad and Dan, have you seen those boxes come in with nothing on the outside with a part on the inside yet?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unusual thing that's happening as well. There was somebody that just came into town not too long ago and bought up a bunch of shops. And he has a tremendous background in the parts and the auto repair industry, tremendous. What's happened in other cities, and I don't know if he's involved, but what's happened in other cities, they bought up a bunch of auto repair shops, guys like us, independents. Mm-hmm. And they're actually buying parts from offshore. And it's estimated that there's 12 or 15 people between us. Between the installer and the manufacturer. So everybody's stepping on it and making money. So they're flying it in, and if you watch, what's that television show where they try to sell your business? What the heck's the name of that?
Shark Tank.
Shark Tank. You talk about landed price. They always talk about landed price. How much did it cost me once it's here? Well, they're bringing these warehouses throughout the United States, and so they've bought it for half as much as they normally would because they've duked out all the middle guys. So they're putting it in their auto repair shop, and therefore they make more money on the parts than you and I do. They pay their technicians just an hourly rate or a salary, but they're going to make a whole lot more money than I and you are because they bought their parts for a dollar. Now they can sell them for 10, and you and I sell them for 10, but we paid 7.
Right.
So it's a different ball game altogether.
It's a little different when you own the whole supply line.
Yeah. Now, there is a place here in town, a warehouse in town that I have got to go see, but there's no name on it, so I don't really know what it is. They take 7 containers a day, and it's estimated they sell $1 million of parts a day.
Hmm.
And it's somebody that is in a facility now that used to be active but hasn't been active for 10 years. So it was a WD, a warehouse direct guy. So it makes a big difference. Our industry is changing.
For sure, it is.
Brad, do you find anything different with respect to the difficulty of the cars? I get that all the time. Which would you rather work on, points and condenser cars or the new fuel-injected fancy, you know what I'm talking about, cars that have 15 computers and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, probably the first option.
Yeah. I would too. But it is getting easier on the newer model cars.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of technology going into them, but you know, so the equipment is advancing to check, test, and evaluate the vehicles as well.
That's an expensive line item for us, is buying new equipment. We still can't find the Dodge scanner that they have that's proprietary. Every once in a while you'll see one on eBay and it'll be gone within minutes. But sooner or later that will come out. Right now we're using generics like you guys are probably. But you're right. And then we're not going to buy the $25,000 scanner for a car that represents 1% of the cars on the road, because that's just not cost effective. So if you have a Citroen, and I'm using that as a joke, if you have a Citroen, I'm not going to buy a scanner for a Citroen. Because I see one of those a year. But I am capable of sending them to somebody who does have that scanner. So I can refer them most of the time. But then again, it's difficult. So we were going to talk about, we had somebody that called in, and as soon as I can find the piece of paper, I'll tell you, is there an advantage to filling up your tires with nitrogen? Do you guys put nitrogen in tires?
We offer it, yes.
Okay. And do people accept it? Do they come in and ask for it?
Yeah, we get quite a few people that have been pre-sold on the idea that nitrogen is, you know, something they have to have.
Okay, and then does it come with the green caps on the valve stems and stuff like that to identify as
yeah.
Is that a good thing? Is that a really good customer service thing? And then the question is when they come in and they say, well, I was in Flagstaff and I had to add 10 pounds of air, what's the answer to that? Because we don't experience that. Is that okay? I mean, do we evacuate?
Yeah, you certainly can just add air to a tire that has nitrogen. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Very quickly lose the advantage of having the nitrogen in when you add regular air, but it certainly is a safe option. I mean,
okay. All right, and there is some nitrogen in the air already, but this, depending on the equipment and whether it's in a big tank or not, it's twice as good. They say twice as good as what the nitrogen. But nitrogen, to me, is what we put on the pastures, and it grows grass like crazy.
Yeah.
And so you over-nitrogen your yard, and instead of mowing it once a week, you're going to mow it twice a week. So that's good for the horses just because it makes it easy for us to feed them, and a little cheaper than that as well. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join us. And there is an advantage because there's a comfort advantage with respect to nitrogen. There's lots of discussion back and forth about nitrogen, but it really has everything to do with the personal comfort of the customer in front of you.
Absolutely.
And so if the customer in front of you has been sold on nitrogen and they come to you, they expect you to be able to handle that for them.
And we can.
And it's kind of like asking for a Fram oil filter or a specific kind of oil and all that other kind of stuff. It's not real beneficial to argue that point when it comes to a customer. 602-508-0960 if you have any questions. You certainly can ask us, and when we come back, we're going to talk about synthetic oil on a classic car. And that's an important consideration because there's lots of you out there with lots of miles on your car. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Dan Slagle from S&S Tire and his nephew, Brad. Both of them work there. Brad, what was it that decided we were going to call you?
Janitor.
Janitor.
Yeah.
He cleans up messes from everybody else. That should be on here. I think that's a lot more fun than GM or, you know, customer service or something like that. Janitor kind of says everything.
I like it.
And if you walk around with a dirty broom in your hand, that really, or they're going to think you're a witch, but, you know, I'm thinking the janitor's probably going to make for it. All right. Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil and Fred Flintstone are friends because Phil's been around transmissions since the 60s. Phil knows the fundamentals of transmissions, how we used to shift them using pressure and vacuum and stuff like that. But the newer ones, we shift it with a computer, depending on where your foot's at, how the temperature of the transmission, whether you're going uphill or downhill. Phil knows all of that. So he's at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around a very long time. And if you have a transmission problem, you can duplicate. And it's not on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon. Phil says, stop by, and I'll send somebody on the car with you, and we'll see what happens. Let's go to the phones, guys. Bob, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank you for your mannerism and the recommendation of some top-notch shops. I've been to a couple of them that you've recommended, and the business I was in, you oftentimes got a little more when you paid a little more, and I find that with these people, they're well worth their money.
Well, thank you for that.
Now, my question. I have a 2016 Jeep, got it new.
Okay.
Up until a couple of weeks ago, I did all the maintenance at the dealership.
Okay.
And I was trying to do that to keep, you know, the maintenance schedule on the da-da. I'm not big into this. I'm also from the dinosaur age.
Okay.
So anyway, these last couple have just been phenomenal prices for what they wanted. And so I shopped around. Anyway, I finally went up to Blackwell, got a price on this brake fluid flush and a fuel injection flush, whatever the heck it was called.
Okay.
They were definitely cheaper.
Okay.
Saved myself $100 in those two items.
Okay.
And my question is, on the scheduled maintenance, I mean, these guys were beating me up at the dealership months ago that these were scheduled at this time. I have a little bit of problem with that, but, I mean, now they're onto this cabin filter thing.
Okay. All right, I can give you some information
on a cabin filter.
Well, I'm going to comment on all of it real quick. So you spent a couple hundred dollars on a fuel injector flush and then a brake fluid flush, but you missed one of them, or you missed five of them. We should have flushed your fuel tank, which is something I saw the other day. There is a chain of dealerships that sends out this notice to all their customers, and it says this. And this is a bunch of BS if I've ever heard it. I'm telling you what. This made me upset. So it says, we noticed that you're in the mileage of most of your neighbors. And as a result of that, we're finding some patterns here that we think that you should consider. We think that you should have your injectors flushed, and actually you should have your fuel tank flushed. So tell me, Brad, how many fuel tanks have, I can't even talk, how many fuel tanks has S&S flushed today or this last week?
Zero.
Dan?
Zero, yeah.
Oh, wait, let me push your button. Hold on just a minute. I'm going to have to bring you back up. And because I messed up, I'm sorry. Give me that again.
We've done no fuel tank flushes. Sounds more like a wallet flush to me.
Okay. Well, it is a wallet flush. I'm here to tell you that unless you've got symptoms, I'm not a real fan of all these fancy flushes. Okay? If you've got an intermittent miss, or if you've got a rough idle, and it's something that's related to the odometer and it's kind of high, then a fuel injection flush is this. Let's flush the fuel injectors and see if it gets better, worse, or the same. Agreed?
Agreed.
So it's a diagnostic process. If we happen to hit a home run, you're the winner. But everybody in our, not everybody, there's a lot of people in our industry that are doing this. And I want to tell you, if somebody, and you mentioned something else, what was the other thing you mentioned besides what we're at now? Oh, cabin filter. You know, here's the deal. If you think you need a cabin filter, then you go in and you say, you know, I want to do a cabin filter. And realistically, do you guys have a mileage or a time on cabin filters?
Yeah, I think the dealer, the manual recommends a certain mileage, uh-huh. But we see it very often that we'll be replacing them before that mileage and after that mileage. It just really depends on the driving conditions you go through. So.
And where they park the car and what's on the hood. Absolutely. And on a dirt road, all that kind of stuff. So here's the question. How many of them have you pulled out that had an inch of dirt, a pair of underwear, and four Jack-in-the-Box tacos on them? Huh? How many?
Yeah.
How many have come in? Now, I'm not saying you don't need to do a cabin filter, but I'm saying what the symptom. How many of them come in and said the air won't blow out of the vents anymore? You know what I mean?
Right.
Those are the extremes. So I say when you go in to have it done, tell them to put the old one in the box of the new one and put it on the passenger side floorboard. Then you know the mileage of when you did it last, and that will give you a good clue on what you have to do it. And that's the answer. But symptoms, here's the killer. You talk to the service writer, and you were talking about the dealer, so I'm going to use them as the example. You said, this is what they said. And then you look them in the eye and you say, sir, I have two questions for you. Number one, where in the manual does it say we're supposed to flush our fuel tank? And number two, tell me what symptoms you're going to fix by flushing my fuel tank. And you know what the answer is? That's exactly what it's going to be. Blackwell probably did the work for you because that's what you wanted. But I suggest
exactly.
That before you do it, that you just say to him, and here's the question. Tom, do you love your wife? He's going to say yes. On Mondays and Wednesdays, he's going to say yes. Then you say, when do you do the cabin filter on your wife's car? Or when do you flush the fuel injectors on your wife's car? That's a better question. The question is what do you do, Mark? What do you do, Dan? What do you do, Brad? So it really is that. But you brought up a good point.
Let me interrupt you a little bit.
Okay.
One thing I was looking at on this fuel injection thing, I mean, you got to realize I worked in a shop back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Got out of it. I didn't like it. Anyway, fuel injection and metric came along. I'm glad I'm long gone. My fuel gas mileage has been down considerably. So that's one reason I thought this fuel injection, whatever, master, whatever, might help. I'm about to take off on a long, about a 5,000-mile trip, and so I intend to see an improvement in gas mileage.
Yeah, because you're going to be at higher RPMs that whole time. You're not going to be stop-and-go traffic. My truck gets 10 miles a gallon.
But yeah. I do mostly long runs. I don't do a hell of a lot of around town. I mean, I'm generally running up to the mountains and back or something. I'm several hours, you know, engine running, and not high RPM, but, you know, these things running, 2,200, 2,500?
Yep, or 18 to 22. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So I'm looking for some increase in mileage because, like I say, I was getting in the high 20s, even as much as the low 30s before, and now I'm getting 23.
Okay, well, so, let me touch on that real quick. Get the junk out of the trunk. If you've got three sets of golf clubs, empty your trunk, air up your tires. You can go cold, maximum inflation. That's not going to hurt anything. Make sure your air filter's clean. And drive as if you had a raw egg taped to the accelerator pedal. And try to drive as if you've got a hot cup of coffee between your legs.
I understand.
Try to drive. Yeah. So I can't explain it, but I know this much. If you were at Blackwell's shop, you should have said, can you do the tailpipe test on me and see what my HC and CO is? If what's coming out of the tailpipe isn't going to kill you for a month if you were to lock yourself in your garage, that's one thing. But if the CO is up at 6% and your hydrocarbons are at 400, then we got stuff coming out of the tailpipe. We need to shut the faucet up front. But fuel injection flush isn't going to make any difference. If you get better fuel economy, then call me back and I'll admit I was wrong. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. Brian, you're up next. How can I help you? Brian?
Brian dropped. Let's go
okay.
to Richard.
Richard? Richard, how can I help you?
Yes, hi. I have a 2003 Camry, and ever since I've owned it, the temperature gauge will go from zero to halfway and never go above halfway, no matter what I do. Lately, I've noticed if I have the air conditioning on and I'm not on the freeway, I'm on like a street with lots of stoplights, or I'm, you know, sitting there idling, the temperature gauge will start heading towards 3/4, and of course, I immediately turn off the air conditioner and drive fast to get down to, so I was trying to gather data to, you know, I bring into one of your shops. So I did drive home on the freeway and everyone was fine because going fast, air conditioning on. Well, I stopped at home, I turned it off, and then turned it back on without starting the engine so I could hear. I could hear a loud fan going, so I opened the hood and took a look, and I could see there's two fans, and one is spinning really fast and the other isn't.
Okay.
Is this good data?
Okay, let me talk to you about this. First of all, I am not worried at all if your gauge runs between half and 3/4. Never, never, never. That's the operating temperature for virtually every car out there today. And I say today, I'm talking from 2000 north of that. Your Camry is certainly one of them. So here's the deal. If you're going downhill from Flagstaff on a cold morning, you expect it to be less than half. Okay? Just the environment. You're going up to Flagstaff in the middle of July when the temperature is 110. You're going to expect it to be at 3/4. That's okay. Your Camry has two fans. It has one that's turned on and off based on the engine temperature. And you have one that turns on and off based on the need of your air conditioning system. So we need to move air across the condenser to give you cold air. So that's why that fan's running when you're sitting still, is because the air conditioning was probably on and the fan was commanded to come on. So you got the two fans. One is temperature related engine. Now sometimes, and I can't tell you on your 03 Camry, sometimes those fans can come on together. So if the temperature of the engine gets up to 230 and then we also have a condenser issue, then both fans will come on. But they both have different functions. They're both triggered differently. And what you're telling me right now, here's the deal. If you wanted to, Richard, and you were going to Disneyland, and you said, Mark, I want to take your grandkids, and I've got this problem with my temperature gauge and my fan run, and I'd say, take the kids. I would say, I'll go with you. I won't take any tools. I'm trying to put you in a comfort zone here where you don't need to worry about what you're talking about.
Okay. I just, since it had changed behavior, I thought, well, maybe that should be looked into because it had never gone above half ever before.
Okay. All right. Let me explain something to you real quick. When does water boil?
At 212, right?
Bingo. Yeah. I asked ASU students the other day and nobody knew the answer, and I'm kind of worried about that. Every time you shut your car off, we condense a tablespoon of water in your oil. And water and oil equals sludge. And in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, we never had a motor that went past 125,000. And when we opened up the valve covers, they opened up the intake, took the oil pan off, there was chocolate sludge everywhere, an inch deep. So the oil manufacturers were being blamed. Everybody said Pennzoil. You can't buy that Pennzoil because it turns into sludge. That's what they'd say. The fact of the matter is none of that's true. What was happening is we had a 180-degree thermostat in there, and we ran that thing less than half. So we never boiled the water out of the oil. We need the oil temperature up above 212 in order to turn the water to a vapor, suck it out of the engine, and send it out the tailpipe. That's the way it is. So the reason why we've gone to a 195 thermostat, and the reason why I want that car to run between half and three quarters, is to get the water out of the oil. So when you drive short trips, we get water. When your wife starts chasing you down in the bowling alley, that's when we start burning off the water. So does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, it does. I guess
okay.
When should I, overheating, I know, is a bad thing. When should I worry about the temperature gauge?
When you get one or two needles away from the red. And I got to take a break, so if you want to continue the conversation, hang on.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Dan Slagle from S&S Tire is sitting to my left. His nephew, Brad, is sitting to my right. And basically, this is a three-generation transition. Yours and your brother Rob's dad and mom started it. And he belongs to Rob. Brad belongs to Rob. And so he's kind of a third-generation guy.
Absolutely.
Here's the great news about third-generation guys. Most of them won't care if you make a mistake because they've already made it. And everybody learns from their mistakes, so don't worry about that.
Okay.
Here's the magic words. I'm sorry. That's all. Just say, I'm sorry, and that's it. Or you can say, is this a mistake you've made before? And you should have taught me this, the solution to this. So I can get you in a lot of trouble if I continue on.
I'm writing these notes down,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. That's the magic word. And it works with my family, too. Renee goes, did you really keep the horses in that corral for 2 days? Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I forgot. So if I forgot, it's kind of. All righty. Let's talk about Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 43rd Avenue in Indian School. He's been around since Jesus was a baby. He actually started in 1967. But Bob that runs the shop and Ellen that runs the front, they are a pair that you're comfortable with. Ellen, you don't have to talk to her for more than a minute and a half to know that nobody at that shop pushes her around. She's polite, she's firm, but she's nice, and she knows more about cars than many of the guys that are going to walk in the door. But Bob in the shop is different. You wave that red flag in front of the bull, you tell him, I've got this problem, and I've had it to 10 other shops, and nobody can fix it, you can see him just light up. Leave your car here, and I'll find it. Sent him a Dodge truck the other day that had that story, had it to everybody in town. He found the bad connection behind the radio in the dash and fixed the thing. That was one of those things that cost $210 to find it and $1 to fix it. That was one of them. Now, that doesn't happen very often, but that's what happens at Larry Harker's Auto. Real quick before I go to Larry. Larry, you hang on. And anybody else, we've got three lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Richard, I do have a couple of other comments. I still want you to run between half and three quarters on your temperature gauge. I want you to do that, and I've explained that we're trying to boil the water out of the car. When I first started in 1968, we never saw a motor go north of 100,000 miles, and when we took it apart, like I said, we literally used scoops to remove the sludge that was in the engine. There's also a lot of other benefits. Your oil will last longer, your filter will last longer, and your car will love you more. Now, the other thing on top of all of that is I'm an advocate of driving your car like you stole it. So it's important to know that your car's like a horse. If he just walks his whole life, then he'll never run. He'll never trot. So it's important to exercise the car every once in a while, and a floorboard acceleration going up a hill for the count, for a 2 or 3 minute ride, floorboard acceleration doesn't hurt it's not going to hurt the car's feelings, and it's going to benefit you with respect to rattling the carbon off of the cylinders and the head and stuff like that. So that's a real benefit. Last but not least, there is a difference between your car on the city streets and the car on the highway. We're going to turn the fans off when you're doing 60 miles an hour because the airflow through the radiator is sufficient. So if you have an overheating problem that gets worse on the highway, most of the time you have a plugged radiator. If you have an overheating problem that goes away when you get on the highway, then you got a fan problem. So the symptoms is I overheat 100% of the time, I get really hot city driving, or I get really hot highway driving. That's all you need. And if the guy looks at you and he goes, you know, what does all that mean? Then you say, well, would you check the air in my tires, and you get the hell out of there. So the idea is there are specific symptoms, and I've just given you the three. And you haven't convinced me that you have an overheat at idle or an overheat on the freeway. And I would expect that you had different readings for both of those. Because when you're doing 45 miles an hour, we aren't shoving that much air through the radiator. But 60, 70 miles an hour, we are. So hopefully that took care of it. Is Larry there?
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
I have a situation. I inherited my dad's car.
Okay.
And it has special meaning because I helped him pick it out and went shopping with him when he bought it 7 years ago. So okay. It's like brand new. It's 30,000 miles. I'll be driving it back from Michigan this summer. It's 2,000 miles.
Okay.
I guess I'm concerned at that point in terms of belts, hoses, and tires. And I was wondering what you would recommend.
You know, at 30,000 miles, I'd come with you. Dan?
Absolutely. The belts and hoses and everything, the tires at 7 years old.
That's kind of an iffy.
You may want to just stop by a tire shop and have them take a look at them. At 7 years old, they're getting up. That's getting up there in age.
Where we get uncomfortable with that. So okay. We need to look. There's a date code on the tire, and it'll tell us what week and what year it's made. I know discount won't touch them at all after they're what, 7 years old.
Yeah, I think seven.
And we're not doing the same. We're not touching them at all.
Yeah, unfortunately, our litigious society has forced that upon pretty much all of us. But it's doesn't necessarily mean the tire's bad at 7 years. But finding somebody to repair one or, you know, work on one could definitely be a challenge.
Because of the chances of us getting sued. And my personal belt and hose stuff is about 6 years and 80,000 miles. That's my personal. So most people are going to hit the 80,000 before the 6 years. But like I said, the 7-year-old car with 30K on it. Now, I take it and have an oil change done. And before I took it to a shop, I'd type their name, John's Auto Repair Reviews, and see if people like him. If everybody that's gone in there for a 1995 oil change complains that he gave him an estimate for $3,000 worth of work, you might stay away from that shop. So take it in, have the oil changed. And now, part of the oil change is checking the air and all the tires, including the spare, checking all your fluids, your belts, and your hoses, and to give it a good visual check over to look for leaks or loose bolts or exhaust leaks. So just take it in for that kind of service, and if you want, you can buy, you know, a road service for a month at a time, and if that would give you peace. But like I said, I'd come back with you. I don't think okay. You need to worry a lot, lose a lot of sleep, okay?
Right. Thanks a lot, Mark. Appreciate it.
You bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we've got somebody on hold. Who is it?
That would be Craig.
Craig, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, morning, Mark. I have a 2014 Prius with about 46,000 miles on it, and I've noticed that my mileage on the computer after each gas fill, I reset the trip meter, and it tells me how much I'm getting per trip, and I'm only averaging in to the 40 to the 41 mile per gallon range. I know a lot of people are crying that I'm getting that high, but
I am.
I'm just wondering. I mean, when I got it a couple of years ago, I was averaging 46, 48.
Okay.
I'm just wondering what's going on.
I need an average for the year because when we get into the summertime, we got humidity and we're aspirating some water with the air. And also we're running the cooling system, we're running air conditioning, that's going to bring it down, and we're also having we're taxing our cooling system of the engine. So it's
yeah,
not...
last summer I was getting about 46.
Okay.
This summer I'm only getting about 41.
Okay. On the Prius, I'm told that everything to do with the computer and the miles per gallon has to do with your right foot. Now, you probably on your Prius have a gauge that has some semblance of green, orange, and red?
Correct, yeah. It's battery, eco, and power.
Okay.
And power just takes you down to like 0 miles per gallon, and battery takes you to 100.
That's it. In your three sections, if you keep it down low and you drive it as with the proverbial egg between your foot and the throttle, you'll increase. As we get older, we have shorter tempers, damn it. And so sometimes we drive more aggressively as we get older, but that's what my wife says. So I don't know if there's any science or medical stuff behind that, but and my bottom line is I wouldn't worry about it. I think I would much rather have you go through this summer, and we're halfway through it, and then maybe do September to December and see if there's a difference.
But well, there will be a difference. There's no doubt about that. I'm just saying, I am a bit of a lead foot, but I am driving pretty much the same I did last summer. So I didn't know if it was if there was a computer setting or maybe a fuel filter going on or something.
Nope. Okay. If you got full wide throttle and you can get that little car up to 70, 80, 90 miles an hour, it doesn't have a fuel filter problem. Besides fuel filter problem, it causes other symptoms. The fuel economy has nothing to do with it. Now, as far as the engine and the computers liking and not liking things, I promise you that Prius would raise its hand and tell you if something was wrong. So no news is good news. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, give me their name.
Say hello to Neil.
Neil. Say hello to Neil is what Gil actually is, the pilot that runs the plane. I'm sitting in the back in the first class section. He does all the work, so he's the one that answers the phone. So you can say to Gil, God bless you for working with Mark Salem. Anyway, Neil, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Thanks. Hey, I got a 2016 Toyota Tundra with 50,000 miles on it. I own a pest control business, so I'm in and out of my truck probably 10 to 15 times a day. Every third time I get in my truck and start it, the AC doesn't come on. Now, everything, when it does come on, it's cold and it runs perfect. But every probably third or fourth time I get in, start the truck, the AC doesn't come on, so I have to shut it off, turn it back on, shut it off about 10 times, and it finally kicks back on. What am I looking at?
Well, I think what a lot of us gray-haired guys would do, we need to know if we got power and ground to the compressor to light it up. So if you go to the air compressor, you're going to find a plug with two wires. I'd certainly take that off, put it back on about 10 times. You know, on-off, on-off. What you're doing is cleaning up the contacts. The other thing, then, the low-pressure switch handles the negative side, typically the negative side of the trigger, and the high pressure switch handles the high side of the trigger. So if we have too low, the ground will drop and the compressor will come to a stop. And if we have too high of pressure, then it'll kick the other side of the leg off. Does that make sense to you? So you have low pressure and high pressure. Then I'd want to know those. But how many miles are on it? 50K, right?
Yep.
Have you ever had the air conditioning serviced?
No.
Okay. I think I'd have somebody do some electrical analysis. You know, I'll tell you what. Is there a U-Haul place close to you?
There is.
Okay. I go buy a little, well, you can go to an auto parts store. I buy a little pigtail that I put a tail light in. and then I just take the two wires and I just jump them across the air compressor. So when the compressor comes on, then power and ground is there. And when the compressor doesn't come off, then one of them is missing. That's the test that needs to be done. We need to determine, is this a Freon level? And I would do that last. Is this an electrical on the low-pressure switch or the high-pressure switch? Or how come? Now, I need you to do this. Do you know where the compressor's at on your Tundra?
I don't, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, just follow the air conditioning lines to it, okay?
Okay.
Have your wife get in. Are you married?
I am.
Okay. Your wife get in, and she's going to start it up and turn the air on and off. I want you to look at the front of the air conditioning compressor, the front of it. The front will come to a stop when the air conditioning is turned off, and the front will start spinning when the air conditioning's on. Okay?
Okay.
That's the clutch. So the clutch is going to engage and squeeze the belt and turn it on. Sometimes it squeezes the belt. Sometimes it just goes clutch hub to clutch hub. But the clutch is going to make it come on and off, and the front of the compressor spinning means it's on. So when you get a situation where it doesn't come on, then I want you to get out of the car and just look at the front. Is the compressor on or off? Another thing it could be is you could be a fan motor or a fan switch. So I want you to play with the fan switch when you think the air isn't on. Because if you start it up and you say the air isn't on, I think it's possible that the blower motor or the blower motor switch is bad, and you think the air isn't on, but really it is, but we're not blowing any across, we're not blowing any cold air at you.
Gotcha.
So there's two things. I want you to play with the fan switch, and I want you to look to see if the front of the compressor is moving. And you know what? If you pull this off and you can name that, you saved yourself $50 worth of diagnostic time. 10-4?
Perfect.
All right.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back with Dan Slagle from S&S Tire, and we'll talk to Brad, who's the janitor at S&S Tile, but that means that he cleans up everybody else's mess. Welcome back, everybody. It has everything to do with me pushing the right button so Dan from S&S Tire can talk and Brad can talk. I'm not used to guests. Usually I don't brush my teeth when I'm in here. And usually I don't shave.
Thank you for brushing your teeth today, Mark. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. When you meet Nate, there's two things. He's a giant of a man, and his hands look like tennis rackets. But he's the kindest and the most knowledgeable diesel guy that I know in that area. So if you have a diesel truck, and that's a light-duty diesel truck, both foreign and domestic, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair might be a place that you stop by and talk to Nate. They also sell diesel stuff and parts on their website. So Nate is a good guy. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a good diesel shop, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix. Rick, good morning. How can we help you? Hi, Rick.
Hi. I'm looking at buying a new 6V6 truck, and I was wondering what your recommendation was.
You know, this is a question that's really tough because there's 811 models of cars and trucks in our database right now. So, you know, the top five or six is Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, and Toyota. Those are what we call the double-digit cars. So more than 10, I mean, all the other cars are single-digit of the fleet in the United States. So those five guys, you know, hold down the double-digit stuff. So I'd stick pretty close to that. I mean, I'm a Dodge and Chevrolet guy. Dan, what are you driving?
GM.
Okay. And how about you, Brad?
GM as well.
Okay. So, you know, I'm not going to slight the Ford people. Most of them have just recently got out of jail, so there certainly be somebody that you would want to talk to. But I'll tell you, one of them I'd stay away. I'd stay away from the new EcoDiesel from Dodge. It's having a problem with the EGR valve and a plastic intake manifold, and the repair is north of $2,000. It's between $2,000 and $3,000. So we've got some fleets that got those, that purchased those trucks, but they're timed out and miles out with respect to warranty. So I think it's going to take a couple years to fix those. So I'd stay away from those, but the V6 and the Chevrolet and the Dodge, without the diesel. And then Toyota is a good truck as far as I'm concerned. And you guys got any opinions on it? Okay. I think you guys are Toyota and GM guys, and I'm the same. So I think you stick with those. To be honest with you, here's my challenge to you. I'm going to challenge you. Buy the truck for the sticker. If the sticker says $31,000, you say, I'll write you a check. That includes sales tax, license, dock fees, desert protection package, and a deodorant that masks any unusual smells in the car. The pack on those is aftermarket warranty, window treatments, window tinting. By the time you get done, you've got $800 to $1,200 worth of ads that you never ask for. So if you work really hard, they can sell that vehicle for the sticker. And they've got a $250 dock fee on there that basically has this young lady to put your name and address in the computer so they can write the paperwork for it. And I don't think that's worth $250 because, frankly, my wife's not worth $250 for 10 minutes worth of work, and I sure as heck ain't either. So that's what I would do. That's what I would do. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Are you welcome, Neil. Rick? No, that was Rick. Let's go to Dan. Dan, good morning.
Hey, good. Thanks for taking my call.
You just bet.
Bought a 2012 Camry with about 106,000 miles.
Okay.
Works perfectly. Love the car. my brother-in-law said, oh, well, you better take out the timing chain, get that replaced right away. It's past 100,000 miles, and if you don't do that and the timing chain breaks, then you lose the engine. So okay. Is he right?
Well, I don't know if your 12 Camry has a chain. I think it has a belt.
I'm not certain.
I checked. Well, you said it had a chain. I know if it's a belt, I'll replace it.
Yeah,
but if it's
no.
a chain.
Well,
you know.
All right, let me address both of them. First of all, what you do is have the VIN number in your hand and call a couple of auto parts store and say, hey, can I order a timing chain for this, or do you have a timing chain for this? And if they say, no, that doesn't have a timing chain, we show a belt there, then you'll know, you know, what it is. As far as the chain is concerned, this is what we do. We simply look at the distributor, or we look at the camshaft, and we put a big bar on the crankshaft, because the crankshaft's connected to the idler, and the idler's connected to the cam. If we take and rock that wrench back and forth, we should see the bottom of the motor work in complete synchronization with the top of the motor, and this situation I'm talking about is probably going to cost you $50, $60. So we're moving the crankshaft forward a couple inches and backwards a couple inches, and somebody's watching our hands and the camshaft. And usually we can look through the oil filter cap and look at the camshaft. So if there's a delay and we move it from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock and the camshaft doesn't move, that suggests that we have play, but the tensioner will take that up. So I'm not real concerned if it's a chain at 106,000 miles, but if it's a belt, you're 5 years, well, you're more than 5 years old, you're seven years old at 106,000 miles. So if it's a belt, I say yes. And here's the question. When you take the belt off of it, are you going to do the water pump, the spring tensioners, the hydraulic tensioners, and the idler pulleys at the same time?
Well, I knew about the water pump. I didn't know about the other ones you're mentioning.
I'm pretty sure the water pump's going to be in that area. So when you start taking all that front of that engine apart, I say you do everything. I say you do the upper and lower hoses, because they're coming off. So all you're going to be charged in a fair condition, you're going to be charged for just the hoses and belts. You already paid to have those taken off when you paid for the belt. So the water pump's going to cost you extra, because that's a little bit extra work. But the tensioner, the timing, or the tensioner, the belt, the idler pulley, you should do all of that, because you don't want to go back in again. So that's my advice to you.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. You betcha. Let me see where we're at. You know, Bill and Robert, I'd like you to stay, but I'm only 58 seconds away from having to take a break, and Gil uses really bad words when I miss my breaks. But when I say we'll be back, that means it's exactly 30 after the hour. And like I said, Gil doesn't like it when I miss that. So Bill and Robert, you're first and second, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. So we do have open lines. And Strictly Diesel, I've talked about, but Kurtz Automotive at I-17 and Bell is a great guy as well. He's northeast corner. He's been around a long time. He's a master tech. Eric's a master tech. Jeff is a master tech, and those two young bucks try to be as good of a technician as Kurt and I are, and they only make it about once a week. So if you're up near I-17 and Bell Road, it's a good idea. If you don't have a shop, stop by Kurt's. But if you do have a shop, then you can stop by and have an oil change and see how they treat you compared to the other guy. So that's Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell. My name is Mark Salem. Dan Slagle sitting next to me. Brad sitting next to me, and they're from S&S Tire. Welcome back, everybody. I should get my microphone situated and push all my buttons. I've got a studio full of people, so if you have to forgive me, because sometimes I'm a little bit frazzled. Nevertheless, Dan from S&S Tire and Brad from S&S Tire sit next to me. We've been involved with one another for 10, 15 years.
Absolutely.
I knew your father. As a matter of fact, I think I think I was at your dad's funeral. I think I was. Your dad was special to me because he knew lots about tires. And I would ask him about warranty issues, and I would ask him, am I right? Am I wrong? So it was once or twice a year I was able to do it. And then every once in a while he'd call me and say, what are you going to do about this? Are you going to convert them from 12 to 134 and stuff like that? So we would talk kind of that way. So, all right, well, hang on just a minute while we take care of Bill. Bill, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. I've got a 96 Yukon, and I have an issue with my radio reception on AM only.
The antenna.
Well, I've replaced the antenna, and I think there's a three sections of lead. I replaced two of the three.
Okay.
But it's a definite electrical interference.
Okay.
If I put the key in and turn it to accessory, it never happens.
Okay.
But if I turn the car on, as soon as I start the car, and it happens every single time, about a minute later, maybe a minute and a half later, I'll get a very high-pitched electrical interference that slowly goes down, like...
And then is that the last you hear of it?
And then it goes back up until it disappears, and that's the last I hear of it until I start the car again.
Okay, well, disconnect the alternator. Just unplug the alternator.
I replaced the alternator.
Okay, now, we can't do this where I guess this and you say you've done that.
Gotcha.
The cables, the AM, has to be away from everything with interference. Why I want you to disconnect the alternator is because the alternator could have been winding up, coming alive. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I wanted you to disconnect the alternator, and I don't care that you put one on it. I still want you to disconnect it because
okay,
do you want me to
pull the little plug-in, or should I take the big... 10-gauge wire off of it.
No, you unplug it from the two that plug into it side by side, the two blades.
Okay,
I don't want you to take
the
nut.
The exciter
yet.
Wire, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, no, actually, that's not the exciter wire. The other one is, and that also runs your light on your dash. But the 12-volt, the number 10-gauge you're talking about, is that's the reflection of the power in the system, and that's reflection of the power going out. So that's just the feed, the talk and the listen kind of wire. But nevertheless, I would do that. And I would also isolate the cables that you have and get them as far away from anything electrical as I can. And then the third thing to do is have somebody either replace the third cable or take it over to Sounds Good to Me on Broadway Road in Tempe. He's been around for 100 years. He's the best stereo guy I know. And I would say to him, would you look at this and tell me what you think and how much you charge me to look at it? But the name of the company is Sounds Good to Me, and they've been my go-to stereo shop for a long time. But clearly it's an interference issue. Clearly it's a problem. You could be having bad ground someplace, which is causing the alternator to delay and then all of a sudden wind up, because the noise you're describing is a wind-up on the alternator. So
mm-hmm.
The question is where's it coming from? All righty.
Do you think it'd be ground at the radio or the ground at the alternator?
Well, here's the deal. The battery should go to the engine, but the engine, we're talking negative side. The engine, the battery goes from to the engine, but the engine sits in rubber. So now we have mm-hmm. to have a cable from the engine to the frame. But we also have off the positive cable on your car that's probably missing half of these grounds. From there, we go to the fender, or we go to what we call the core support, which is the piece of metal that holds the radiator. Then from the back of the engine, we should have a ground that goes to the firewall. So you've got all these grounds that you have to check. Now, I could check all those grounds with a meter in about 10 minutes, and I would do it electronically. So I would look for a volt drop. So my ticker is on the positive, and then I touch this ground, this ground, this ground, this ground, and take all the readings, and all of a sudden I find one that's zero, or I find one that's 2 volts, and all the rest of them are 12, 12, 12, 12. Then I found the bent ground. So if you wanted to do a volt drop test, you can Google that, and a volt drop test is basically telling you what the connections are on both sides of a circuit. But the ground could be causing that problem as well. Robert, I'm not going to be able to get to you because I'm up against a break, but please stay there, and I'm going to take you first. I'm not going to waste any time. I'm not going to give the name of the station. I'm not going to give any phone numbers like 602-508-0960. I'm just going to take care of Robert and anybody else that wants to call at 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. It's 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Dan Slagle is sitting next to me, and he's from S&S Tire. They have three locations on the west side. Then Brad is sitting to my right, and he's the janitor for S&S. He's also part of the principals, but he cleans up messes from everybody else. So we've named him the janitor because you couldn't come up with a name. I offered you general manager. I've offered you customer service. I offered you, what was that other one where you handle the staff?
HR.
HR. And you didn't bite on any of them, so I'm naming you the janitor. To heck with you. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1980s. We've been friends. I trust him to send people to. He does really good workmanship. He has good, great customer service. He has fast turnaround time. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. And he's the most big-shot fisherman I've ever met in my life. So if you want to go sit in the lobby and talk to Tom about fishing, make your appointment. He's on I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner, and that's Action Auto Repair. Now, one other thing I want to do is I want to go to Robert because I just lied to him, and I told him I'd go straight to him. But I messed up, and Robert, I want to apologize. You have my full attention.
Well, this Robert, you always tell good lies, and it's always with good humor. So
that's okay.
Thanks for the great information this morning and the past years. I have a 2002 Toyota 4Runner, 112,000 miles. The last 3 years, I put less than 1,000 miles a year just because of traveling and so on. Mm-hmm. So the engine light comes on, and when the engine light comes on, it also puts the BSC track light on and the BSC track off light on. I went to AutoZone for a test, and they said it was the oxygen center. You know, I got to do an oil change and other things on it because I haven't done it for a while because I've been putting 1,000 miles on a year.
Yeah.
And so I'm at 7th Avenue in Osborne. So is Harkins the closest or the best or where would you go?
Well, you got Martin's at Indian School on 16th Street, and Martin's has been around since Jesus was a baby. Dave runs it now, but his dad, and I've known his dad since the 60s. And then you've got 25th Street Auto Repair, 25th Street and Indian School. Those two guys are real close, and either one of them. Now, you have an oxygen sensor code, right?
Well, yes, and I have that's what the AutoZone diagnosis was. You know, they did their test. But I have an inspection coming up, so, you know, I figure if they see the light on, they'll kick me out. So.
That's right. Well, we just want to touch on base on that. AutoZone doesn't have a prayer in hell of telling you what's wrong with your car. Change the question, Mark.
Okay.
When you have an O2 sensor, how many times do you replace the O2 sensor? About 25% of the time. Well, what about the other 75%? Vacuum leaks, plugged fuel filters, bad mass airflow sensors, the ductwork between the mass airflow sensor and the throttle body's got a cut in it. There are lots of reasons. We actually replace fuel filters that make the car run lean, which makes the O2 sensor scream lean. And he's looking at a code. His job is to sell you parts, and he says, you have an oxygen sensor code. You're lucky that he didn't say you have four of them, and altogether it's $850. You're lucky that you didn't bite on that. You're lucky that you still have the $800, but I can give you one example every week of somebody coming in on a $400 mass airflow sensor because the three-whiskered kid that doesn't even have any hair on his chest told them that he needed a mass airflow sensor. Can you tell? You wound me up.
So Harkins is easier travel. Is there any reason not to go to them?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Because it's easier to go to the west than the to me anyway. Good. So what you've told me was don't go in and tell him I've got a diagnosis. Just tell him here it is and do what you can do with it. Okay, so that's what I need to tell him.
This is what you say. I got a check engine light on. How much is your diagnostic? And he's going to say, Ellen, you're going to talk to Ellen, 75 to 125. Yep. You say, you're going to call me with the repair afterwards. So you have three things. You have the diagnostic, then you have the part, then the installation of the part. Now, this could be something we plug in the vacuum line. So you just say, I have a check engine light. What's your diagnostic? And call me with an estimate. That's all you do.
Fine.
All righty?
Good. All right. I want to tell them, you know, I want an oil change, and I want them to check, you know, everything. So, I mean...
And you tell them, belts, hoses, fluids, and tires. Those are the four big dogs.
Belts, hoses.
Fluids and tires.
Thank you.
All righty, good luck.
Thank
you, Robert. Brian, you're up next. Brian? Hello, Brian.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
I actually just called to say hi. You gave me my first job.
Do you still like me?
I do still like you. I didn't work there for a long time, but you gave me some great advice.
Wait a minute. Are you related to Maury?
I am.
Okay.
That's me.
I know who you are. We've only had like...
Go ahead.
You were a good technician. I liked you, and I had talked to Maury about you. I hope you're doing well. Are you still in the trade?
I am. I own my own shop, and I didn't want to say my last name because I don't want to advertise for free on the radio.
No. What's the name of your shop?
Zemp Auto.
Zemp. Z-E-M-P Auto.
That's right.
All right. Where are you at?
Corner of Alvista and Southern.
Alvista Southern. Okay. All right. I'm done with you. The rest of you, if you live near Valvista and Southern, Brian worked for me for a very long time ago. He's a good guy. He knows right from wrong, and he never came up front with a laundry list of guesses, which is a lot of other technicians have a bad habit of doing that. Not only that, he was an admirable employee. He was just a good employee. He's married now, but he's exactly the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home. Okay. How'd I do, Brian?
You did great, but I did not call to advertise.
I know that. But see, I'm the boss of this airplane, so I can do anything I want, and I respect you, and you're a good part of our business, so why not?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I just called to say hi, tell you I like your show. I listen when I have time. I own my own business, so I don't have time a lot, but I was laughing at your last call because 5 to 10 times a week, what do we get? Someone who comes in and says, AutoZone or O'Reilly diagnosed my car, and I say, no, they didn't. No, they didn't.
You like my three-whiskered kid comment?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, so, well, the kid with no hair on his chest or three whiskers, I don't think he's the kind of guy that you want to guess, you know, hundreds of dollars on. But, Brian, I got to go, but I want to tell you something. Thank you for calling, and I know you didn't call for that reason, and I didn't know you were coming in. I didn't even know if I was going to guess right. That's why I didn't use Maury's last name. But
I figured I
know exactly who you are. Thank you, Brian. Thank you for your compliments. Thanks, to Mark. Me as well. Okay. Bob, you're up. How can I help you?
Good morning, Dr. Mark and Dan and Brad, wasn't it?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I know opinions are like anal cavities. Everybody's got one and they all stink, but since I got three of you there, we can really smell the place up.
It's okay, the stink part I've never heard before. Have you ever heard that?
I haven't heard that one.
Oh, no.
Anyway, yeah, it's one of my favorites whenever somebody says, well, my opinion, well, you know about opinions. But anyway, here's my quandary here, and I'm up in Denville, Colorado right now. My best friend passed back in February, and his daughter, I'm here helping out the family get some stuff straightened out. His daughter just gifted me his 2004 Ford Explorer, 4-liter, four-wheel drive, 126,000 miles. Excellent condition, the interior and the body and everything except for that crack that they have on all of my understanding in the back window.
Yeah.
Or not the window itself, but you know, that part down below it. Four-wheel drive. Like I say, I live in Phoenix, but I did a lot of research on this, and I understand they have transmission problems. What would you do?
You know what? That's an easy question. You guys have an opinion? What would you do, Dan?
I'd run it.
I'd drive it till it died.
Yeah.
I'd drive it till you had symptoms. I'd drive it and enjoy it. Turn on the music, whatever your buddy used
to
play.
It's a nice gift.
And it's a nice gift.
He country boy, definitely.
Okay, there you go. There you go. Put some country western music on, and he'll ride with you. But let me explain. The car's an old car. You didn't pay any, you don't have any money on the basis of it. I want you to take this tilt. Fix things as they pop up. I don't want you to do a bunch of preventative maintenance, but I want you to do the preventative maintenance, but I don't want you to go out there and fix something before it raises its ugly head, unless, of course, you're in for an oil change. And he says, Bob, you need to come here and look at the brakes, or Bob, you need to come and look at this fan belt that's coming apart and the top of it's ripped off and stuff. Then you deal with it. But I want you to drive it, enjoy it, and fix things as they come up with, and do some oil changes and tire repairs in the middle. But no,
okay.
I wouldn't worry about all the other stuff that you had.
I've got a good shop here, really good shop that I've used from time to time. Should I take it in and maybe have them go through it, pay for a diagnosis or anything, or just drive it till they're equipped?
Let me ask you: you guys have like a used car check over where people bring a car in?
We do.
Okay, and give me a parameter with. I think ours is between $90 and $125. Just depend on how big the monster is.
We have two levels.
See, that's worth it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have two levels. I think one's about $50, and the other's around $110.
And that's the big dog. You're going to be checking emissions and codes and all that kind of stuff.
That's great.
Okay.
That's great.
So I think the answer to your question is that's called a used car checkover in my world.
I want a full-blown analysis along with prices. Thank you very much. And let's mark the ones that are going to break down immediately, and let's mark the ones that I'm going to have symptoms on. Let's mark the ones that you won't let me take your grandkids, you know, to McDonald's two miles away. That kind of discussion is a good one. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. You bet. You know, I'll bet you that you guys can tell stories about used car checkovers where they've taken it back to where they went and they did the list you gave them. And and that's fun. So you charge them $100, and we wrote a lady with a Maxima not too long ago, a $500 this is now list, right now. And she went in there, and I also said, the staff said, you got no trade-in. This car has a private party sale, a dealership sale, and an auction sale. And we think you should be north of the private party. So she went and got a discount on the car using the numbers we provided her. And they did all the $500 worth of work for free. Then she brought it back to us, and we were happy to verify they did all the work. And so the used car checkover doesn't always hit a home run like that, but it is a very it gives them at least a good knowledge of what the heck's going on underneath the hood and all around the car. So the alternative is you guys have seen someone that brought the car in after they bought it, and you have to be the bearer of bad news?
Yikes, yeah. I remember one situation where we did an oil change, and there's literally metal shavings that came out with the drain plug. Mm-hmm. They had just gotten this vehicle the day before, and I told them, bring the vehicle in before you purchase it. Let us look at it. They didn't listen, and they ended up arguing over with the place they had bought it from, and they ended up not helping them out in that situation.
Because he signed the as-is document. Yeah. Buy it as-is. There's stories like that all the time.
Right.
You can get underneath there and find a Coors can wrapped around the exhaust system with a couple of clamps. You know, you see all kinds of that kind of stuff. And I think you'll both agree, it's kind of depends on who's selling the car. There's a lot of dealer type of operations and used car operations that have their reputation at stake. But it's the private party. And I tell people, tell them, are you the original owner? Can I look at your records? Because what happens is we just talked to Bob, and he had it gifted from the daughter of his buddy. All right. Then people will say, oh, yeah, I've had this for a long time. Well, they bought it a week and a half ago. You can find that out on Carfax. Then they're going to turn around and sell it to you. So the reason why they don't want it is because they got a problem. So it's that kind of issue. It's the difficult part is either do the used car checkover before you buy it, or be prepared to take a financial whipping. You have a 50-50 chance. Will you agree with me, Matt?
Yeah.
50-50 chance of taking a financial whipping afterwards. At least you have some negotiation posture there. All right. Well, you guys have a long trip back to the West Valley. They came up to Payson to see me today. That's not true. We're in Tempe right now. But I enjoy being around you guys. I'm grateful that you're in your third generation. That gives me hope. And I don't know anybody else that's done that. I don't know anybody else. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who said that he wanted his son to take over the business, but his son didn't want anything to
He's
do with it.
He's too smart for that.
You're sitting here next to Brad.
Hey.
So is this something you can see yourself do for the next 30 years or so?
Definitely. Definitely.
And you enjoy it?
Yes, okay. Very much so.
And
yes.
Making people happy that are mad, that's the best part?
Yeah, helping people out, you know, with their car problems.
But then again, you got the people that come in that you changed my windshield wiper blades, but my air conditioning hasn't worked since then.
We do get that sometimes.
Not very much,
right.
But it does happen. The rest of the people kind of pay a price for that. But in reality, it's just part of our business, and it's up to us to decide. If the repair is $5, I might do it. If the repair is $500, chances of me doing are slim. Mark@MarkSalem.com is my email address. Mark@MarkSalem.com. If you have a question, you can always send me an email. If you include your cell phone, I'll call you on a blocked line for obvious reasons, but I will call you back most of the time because I hate to type. And when I type, I only use two fingers, and it's going to take me forever to answer your thing. So I'd just much rather call you. So year, make, and model, give me the symptoms. Tell me what you think it might be. Don't talk about YouTube to me. And I don't care what the three-whiskered kid said at the local auto parts store. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Brad. S&S Tire, 3 locations on the west side. If you're over there, I hope you try them.